The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 5th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Once while Jesus was standing beside the lake of Gennesaret and the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he saw two boats there at the shore of the lake. The fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. Jesus got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little way from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. When he had finished speaking, Jesus said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we have worked all night long, but have caught nothing. Yet if you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets were beginning to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." For he and all who were with him were amazed at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people." When they had brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed Jesus. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
I am very happy to be here, and I'm sorry the choir is at my back, but I think you can hear anyway. These are wonderful texts on any day, but for the day of an annual meeting, they are really spectacular. Did you plan that, Jen? Oh, of course. I mean, really, Isaiah in the temple, and here you are in the temple. That wondrous scene, everything shaking, everything coming alive, all these seraphs that were usually just stone somehow flying around that temple, and then that wonderful thing where God is calling to Isaiah, saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for me?" And Isaiah says, "Here am I, send me." What a wonderful verse for an annual meeting. "Will you serve on the Vision and Governance Board? Here am I. Send me." Or this wonderful gospel that we just heard from the 5th chapter of Luke. One of the calling stories in the New Testament where the disciples, the first ones, in this case, Simon Peter, James, and John, left everything to follow Jesus, left their boats behind. These are wonderful, wonderful texts for this particular day. Here am I. Sign me up. Now in Luke, this story of the calling of these first disciples comes a bit later than it does in Mark and in Matthew. And so by this time, the disciples who weren't yet called disciples, but Simon Peter especially, seems to really know who Jesus is. Jesus has already healed a number of people, including Simon's mother-in-law. So Jesus has been in Simon Peter's house. And a lot has happened up to this point, so there are the crowds that gathered around wanted to hear what Jesus had to say. So they must have known Jesus too. So there were so many that Jesus had to borrow a fishing boat for his pulpit that day. So he pulled away a little ways from shore in Simon Peter's boat, and then he taught them. I wish we knew what he said. There's no record of that. But when he finished teaching or preaching, he said to Simon, I want you to pull out into the deeper water and cast down the nets. Master, we've been fishing all night, and we have caught nothing. You can hear the exasperation in Simon's voice. He knew a whole lot more about fishing than Jesus. And yet, without seeming to skip a beat, he said, "At your word, I will let down the nets." A split second. It all happened in a split second. And yet we know, if we are honest, that sometimes that split second lasts almost a lifetime. And the net just stays there in the bottom of the boat, waiting for us to respond. When I think of Simon Peter and his angst, really, Master, we've fished all night and caught nothing. Now, you're telling me now that I'm going to catch some fish? Many years ago, I got a letter. Well, first I got a phone call from a man I had never met. His name was Paul, and he lived actually in Seattle. And he had heard a sermon that I had preached on the Protestant Hour radio program. Now, that program wasn't just for Protestants, and it never was an hour. It was half an hour. But that's what it was called. And so, you know, he had heard a sermon, and he asked where he could get a copy of it. Oh, isn't that wonderful, Jen? But really, when that happens, you say, oh, wow, they want a copy of the sermon. So, I mean, I was very flattered, and I told him where he could send to get a little booklet that had all of the sermons for that series in it. And so he must have written, and after a few weeks, he wrote me a letter. And I saved that letter because it touched me deeply. This is part of what he wrote. It was a sermon on that story and in the 24th chapter of Luke, where Jesus is on the road with two disciples going to Emmaus, and they don't recognize him until he is at table with them and breaks bread. So that was the story. That was the text. So Paul wrote this to me. He said, "When I came to the moment where they recognized Jesus, I broke into uncontrollable sobbing. After I regained my composure, I came back to finish the story, and the same thing happened again. What on earth was happening to me? After an hour of sitting and wondering, I went back to finish the story. Since then, I have gone through the necessary motions of life, but my head and my heart are full of the same questions, endlessly repeated. What has happened? What is happening? What must I do?" You know, I'd like to claim that it was my sermon that was particularly forceful. But in truth, that particular sermon was almost word for word retelling of that story from Luke 24. It wasn't my sermon that got through to him. It was the gospel. It was Jesus that got through to him. He went on to tell me a bit about his life. He had, you know, been part of the church as a child. He had read the Bible. He had, gone to Sunday school. As he went off to college and as he became a professor of languages at a university, he really just left Jesus behind. He came to see Jesus, these are his words, as a charismatic lunatic. So he really dismissed Jesus in his life. And then now, all of a sudden, it seemed like a split second, but probably it was almost a lifetime. He came to see Jesus in a different way. He considered the possibility of believing again. It may be as disruptive to consider the possibility of faith as it is to consider the possibility of doubt. Let me just say that again. It may be as disruptive to consider the possibility of faith when you've given it up as it is to consider the possibility of doubt. Either way, nothing is ever quite the same. That's why he was asking, "What is happening to me? What's going on?" I saved that letter because this man I never ever did meet, his name Paul, he taught me a lot about Simon Peter. And he taught me that what Peter was saying here had a lot more to do than just with fishing. "I fish these waters all night, and I don't expect to catch anything now. I gave up believing long ago, and I don't expect to start believing now." What convinced a fisherman to cast his net on the other side of the boat, even though he had fished all night and caught nothing? What convinced a professor to consider the possibility of believing in Jesus when he heard this gospel story, even though he had given up on Jesus a long time ago? Both of those carry the radical expectation that what you've decided may not be the whole truth. I don't know how the word gets through to us. Maybe a conversation with a friend. Maybe you hear a scripture passage as though you had never heard it before. Maybe it's the death of a spouse, or the loss of a job, or the birth of a child. Or it may be the feeling of emptiness when everything seems to be going really well in your life. When this happens, we often use the word conversion to describe it. "I had a conversion experience." But you know, how many of you like that word? Nobody in the choir? No. It can be a scary word, right? I mean, it conjures up images of forced baptisms or something you don't have any choice in, or an altar call that is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And some of us may have never, ever had that experience. But when I read the Bible, the thing that is so clear is that the Bible goes out of its way to describe conversion in a very different way. It doesn't happen once and for all. It may not be as dramatic as Isaiah's in the temple. It may happen over and over and over again. And I think this is so true about Simon Peter. He's converted here in his boat and on the shore, and he gets up to follow Jesus. But Peter has to be converted over and over again. He has to be converted after he argues with Jesus about suffering and dying, and Peter doesn't want to hear anything about it, and Jesus scolds him and says, "Get out of here, you're like Satan to me." Peter has to be converted at that moment again. And during Jesus' trial, when Peter is asked if he's one of Jesus' disciples, and he denies it, not just once, but three times, he had to be converted again. What about you? Or me? For some people to walk through the threshold of that door or the parking lot door is one of the scariest things that you've had to do because you had left the church behind long ago. Some people may have come into this church for the very first time that you've ever been in any church, and you didn't know the songs and you couldn't figure out why people were standing or sitting. And you've been converted again and again. What if you're a lifelong member and you've been here for years? Sunday after Sunday, and then one Sunday, you hear a song or a prayer or a reading or a sermon, and something cracks open in you and you feel like you are beginning all over again. Conversion is like that in the Bible. It happens again and again and again, over and over at different times in our lives. Frederick Buechner, novelist and essayist and pastor, wrote these words about following Jesus. He says, the voice that we hear over our shoulder never says, first be sure that your motives are pure and selfless, and then come follow me. If it did, then we could none of us follow. We want to know who Jesus is before we follow him, and that's understandable enough, except that the truth of the matter is that it is only by first following him that we can begin to find out who he is. I hope that we are all converted many times, even if we don't like the word. Even if we have been here a long time, or if we're here for the first time. The poet John Bell, hymn writer, pastor from Scotland, says it this way: will you come and follow me if I but call your name? Will you go where you don't know and never be the same? Will you let my love be shown? Will you let my name be known? Will you let my life be grown in you and you in me? I hope that we are all converted many times.